Here's what you're going to understand by the end of this episode. Why the capitalization phase is the foundation for your entire system. Why the people who push through the capitalization phase are who this system is designed for. And why Nelson Nash himself said that starting your infinite banking system is just like starting a new business. A business that's guaranteed to succeed.
Nelson Nash said, if you know what's going on, then you'll know what to do. And here's what you miss if you don't listen. You'll keep measuring this system the way the financial industry wants you to measure it and how they taught you to measure everything by what it's doing right now. And you'll miss the entire point.
This is a mindset episode, and it might be the one that saves your entire financial system. Let's get into it. All right. Well, here we are on a Monday morning or Monday afternoon, as it were. How was your weekend, Paul? Anything eventful?
Yeah. So last night I was filling up my pool and I normally set a timer like, hey, 2 hours, shut the hose off. Well, I failed to do that and I left the hose on all night. So my pool was full, like over full, I would say. So this morning I texted our maintenance guy who taught us, gave us the pool class. And I was like, hey, can you remind me how to do backwash again so I can drain this level down? So he sent me I sent him a quick picture of what my equipment looked like. He's like, yeah, there's that valve, do this, do that, whatever. And it was super simple. So I drained, I don't know, a couple of inches off the pool this morning, and now it's good.
Where did all that runoff go?
So I have a drain system on my, like, the pavers down here, so it drains toward the house. Then we have a linear drain that goes under the ground and out down toward the street, believe it or not.
Yeah, I remember it was like 2 summers ago. We left town for a couple of days. I came home and spent the night. The next morning I was outside, or I was in the gym doing something, and my mechanical room was right next door and I could hear the sump pump operating. I was like, well, that's really weird. And I look out the window and sure enough, it's spitting water out. I'm like, I don't think it's rained. It's definitely not raining right now. And for some reason, it didn't register to me that maybe I should go check for some water somewhere. I mean, the basement was dry. It wasn't overflowing. It was just pumping. Well, I go outside that afternoon and the spigot on the side of the house, there's no hose connected to it, but it's just at full speed, just draining water, just like a fire hose.
Yeah,
going all around the foundation of the house, you know, and the sump pump is just working overtime. So that was probably, I don't know, a solid 3 days that water was just running, which drives me crazy that, you know, people probably saw that, like some neighbors had to have seen that. Like, somebody come over and shut it off for me.
Right.
Be a good neighbor.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I just blame the kids for it. I'm sure it was the kids' fault.
Yeah.
Has to be the kids.
Gotta be, right? And the other thing is, like, we have an automatic fill feature, but it's just not hooked up. So I need the pool company to come out here and finish our pool class and get all that hooked up so that, because it gets winterized. So it's could have been avoided, and I should have known better. I filled up the pool plenty of times, and it's just I forgot.
Yeah, you know, it's like the beginning of everything. I mean, you're new to owning a pool, so there's going to be some things that happen that you don't expect. Your expectations are probably wildly out of bounds on what reality is. On, hey, this is going to be effortless, no issues whatsoever, and then that happens.
Talking to other people with pools, I've been told that I'm way too anal about it. They're like, it doesn't have to be perfect. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's like, is your water clear? Well, I'm like, yeah, it's crystal clear.
I would say you probably are. I mean, you're a guy who doesn't take any of his cars through an automatic car wash.
Yeah, not unless it's touchless. And even then, like, I generally just don't. I hand wash them because,
I mean, even a Ram, you won't take a truck through a car wash with brushes.
No, never.
Yeah. See, that's extremely anal. So that's Paul. That's our Paul.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we were talking about kind of relating to your pool situation there. Let's talk about the infinite banking concept and the capitalization phase. Because that's, you know, the early phases, the early years of building your policy and building your system, where, you know, some people have different expectations than what happens in reality when it comes to the capitalization phase. And a lot of people, they just can't get over those early capitalization years enough to even begin.
Yeah. And it's funny because they never batted an eye when their financial advisor or their investment guy or whoever was like encouraging them, and maybe this didn't happen, but most people are encouraged to, you know, max out your Roth IRA, max out your 401k, but you can't take that money out till you're 59 and a half. People just accept it blind, like, oh, and I'm, you and I are both those people. Like, yep, got it. Like, well, yep, 59 and a half. And you just hand over money, tens of thousands of dollars a year going away from your control and locked up to your 59 and a half years old. And nobody, you know, you bring that up and you're like, well, you did this for the last 20 years. I mean, this, you're going to have access to, you're going to be able to touch this. Yeah. And a good portion of it right out of the gate. So,
right. So most people, in certain areas, because we're all taught to really segment our financial life and put it in different buckets. You know, and every bucket has a different mindset. This one over here, the retirement bucket, all put it in there and don't think about it for 40 years. This one over here, your accessible cash, your savings bucket. Hey, monitor that. As soon as it grows high enough, go use that to go buy something. This is a different bucket. This is it's a long range mindset. It's almost kind of like your retirement bucket, where most financial advisors, investment advisors will tell you, if you call them saying, hey, the market took a hit. Man, what's happening? What's going on with my portfolio? They're going to say, well, how many years do you have to retirement? 20? Why are you even worrying about it? Like, you got to keep that long range mindset with investing. If you're an investor, if you're a trader, that's a different thing. But most people aren't traders, they're investors.
Right.
Investors have a long range mindset. Same thing with this, with the infinite banking concept. It's a long term thing. It's long range.
Yeah. And, you know, Nelson was a forester, right? He had a forestry degree from Georgia, I think, right? And worked in that industry for a decade. And, you know, he talks about in the book here, I'm holding it up, folks, if you're listening on the podcast app, but, you know, he talks about, you know, the ideal planted field, you know, this many acres, this many segments, improvement cuttings, et cetera. Anyway, but the whole idea behind it is it's going to create cash flow. It's going to create reliable cash flow, but it's going to take time for that. You know, that harvest to kind of come through. And that's okay. That's one of his bedrock principles, right? Is to think long range. And of course, don't be afraid to capitalize. Valuable things take time to grow. Regardless if you're doing this or you're an investor or whatever, it's going to take time. And that's what we've talked about Warren Buffett on this podcast all the time. One thing that's made him very successful is time. He started investing very young and has enjoyed compound growth of his money for his, you know, for 80 something years, right?
Yeah.
So that's really, you know, of course, this hockey stick at the end, right? I mean, it's just his wealth has accelerated since, you know, probably his age 60.
Which means the majority of his current wealth has only been accumulated in the, like, probably the last 10 years.
Yeah, we'd have to research that, but that's probably close to the truth.
I mean, that's how compound growth works. Mm-hmm. You get more later, faster. Kind of sounds stupid. Hey, get more later, faster. That's right. Compound interest. It comes later, but it comes much faster. Therefore, you know, how much you're going to earn every year, like in your policy, we always talk about this. These policies get more efficient every single year. So every dollar you pay in cash value is creating more, or I'm sorry, every dollar you pay in premium is creating more than a dollar in cash value pretty early in the policy. And that only accelerates to where it's creating multiple dollars every year in cash value for every dollar in premium. And the longer you own it, the more it multiplies. And you said something, you said this will create cash flow. Well, let's even remove the last word. This will create cash.
Yep.
At some point on the day you graduate from this earth, it's going to create cash where cash did not exist before. That's a great thing about life insurance. Nothing else does this. Nothing else creates cash where cash did not exist. Unless, you know, you work at the Federal Reserve and you can create cash where cash did not exist. But none of us do. Right?
Yeah, exactly right. It creates money where none existed.
Yep. So the capitalization phase is really building your foundation. I mean, before, kind of like Mr. Miyagi, and if you
sand the floor and you paint the fence,
you know, paint the
wax
fence
on,
like
wax
this.
Off.
Exactly, that's the foundation. And then once you've built that foundation, then then this house just keeps building itself. I like to compare it. It's kind of like owning your first house. Oh, after you made that first mortgage payment, you didn't go check your house value with the bank and say, hey, how much equity do I have? I just made a month's payment. They're going to look like, at you like you're a lunatic.
Congratulations, you just made $88.
Yes, but thank you for paying us $400 in interest with that payment. So no, but you consistently make those payments month after month, year after year. And at some point you look back and maybe that's when you're going to go sell the house down the road and upgrade. Or maybe it's, hey, I've got a need for capital, so I'm going to try to tap the equity in my house through a home equity line of credit. And you go to the bank and find out how much you have. And you're like, wow, I have that much. All because I've been making a little payment every single month for the last however long. And it built up to that. So it's kind of like that. Hold on, give me a second. Give me a second. I need a breather. This is like it's called an inhaler. It's aromatherapy.
So some people, I don't know if it's most people, but let's just say a lot of people come into, at least initially when they're exploring the infinite banking concept and they're thinking, and we've had clients talk about this, hey, I want to put my cash value to work. They get this, you know, fear of missing out. And we've talked about how that vanishes over time. The more capital you accumulate, the less interesting things get. And you're kind of more, your criteria becomes more stringent on what deals you want to participate in. Because not everything is an opportunity. Not everything is great, right? There's, you know, you just become more picky and you grow into it. You become more mature financially as well. So you develop that banker mindset and ask yourself, you know, what am I building, right? I didn't fund my policies and then immediately take money right back, you know, against them, borrow against them. I didn't have a need. I could have borrowed some money against them, right? But I didn't have a need. So, and I understood, like, I'm building for the future this financing system so that my family can ultimately live free, right? Free from Wall Street, free from the banking system.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yep. And it takes some time. It's like starting a new business. Anybody who, like, if you have started a business before, how long did it take you? How many years did you have to feed that business before that business could feed you? Like, for most people, it's a good number of years. I'm just in the life insurance business. We had to feed this business for a while before it created anything noteworthy coming back.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, that's how, like Nelson said, this is just, it's like starting another business. You're just starting the banking business, which is the most profitable business in the world. And it's going to take a little time to get up and running. Now that doesn't mean, so Nelson talks about waiting, you know, 7 years as the capitalization phase. Again, you should remember that this book was written 26 years ago. Probably 27 or 28, actually. It was published in 2000. Mm-hmm. 7 years isn't some magic number. So let's just dispel that rumor, because sometimes I'll get on a call with somebody and they'll say, so I hear you have to wait like 7 years before you can access any cash value, or before I can, it actually has any cash value. So need to dispel of that myth right now. Like it starts working right away. The whole 7 years thing, and maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's more, maybe it's less, depends on how the policy is designed. Right? Nelson talks about it, where I've got it right here on page 24 of the fifth edition, Becoming Your Own Banker, is, why not capitalize each policy purchase for at least 7 years to the point where dividends will pay all the remaining premiums on the policy? Now, is that going to be the case for every policy? No. No, every policy may be different. But that's what he's talking about. So these things do become, at some point, self-sufficient. I don't know. I don't ever plan to stop putting my capital in there as new premium every year for as long as I can.
Yeah, I agree. I think new capital becomes, or, you know, new premium with new dollars every year for as long as possible. And then again, later on, if, you know, somebody needs to do something called premium offset where the dividend pays the premium, so be it. But yeah, you know, I think that you said something, you know, about this is about banking, right? And I think people that quit this early, especially early on, you know, it's clearly obvious to all of us and our listeners, we're practicing IBC, we've been doing it for a while, we understand what's going on financially, we understand that this is not in lieu of investing, this is just a capitalization strategy, right? This is a place to warehouse money that we certainly use for investing. So, but people don't understand what they're giving up if they quit. If you quit IBC, doesn't matter when you do it, but you really don't understand finance. You don't really understand what's going on. And neither does your advisor. Your advisor doesn't know what's going on either, right? You know, 34 and a half cents of every disposable dollar, right? After tax money that you take home throughout your lifetime on average is going to be spent on interest payments to somebody else's bank. Why wouldn't you want to get into the banking business so you can make the money that the bank has been making off you your entire life? It seems so obvious to me. And it doesn't cost you any more money than you have, right, to save or to capitalize.
Yeah,
so it really just boggles the mind. Yeah, you're already spending it.
Or not even spending, but saving or
somewhere.
Putting away somewhere right. else. You're putting this money somewhere. It's simply transferring it to a different location or sequencing it through a different system before it comes out the other side and you spend it. That's really all it is.
And then short, you know, I don't want to get too off topic. And another thing they said to me is, I'm thinking of these recent clients who are great people, but they said, you know, we don't really have a need because, you know, these people, our kids are doing great. We're not going to, you know. I was like, well, how do you know that's going to continue? You have no idea.
Right.
Right, you have no idea because the future is unknown. You have no idea your health, your fine, you know what your investment portfolio is. You have no clue. So, in the end, it's two different things. You just don't understand what IBC is, and that's, you know, once onesies and twosies, you lose them once in a while,
yep.
And it's sad because we know what they're giving up, right? They don't know, but I could see it, and I just it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you can only do what you can do. You can't convince everybody, and you know we don't. I wouldn't even say we try to convince anybody.
We're
trying to give
don't.
You the facts and kind of pull back the curtain to show you what exactly this really is. And then you make your own decision. That's where it always starts, is you getting educated, and then you make your own decision on whether this is right for you and you move forward. And then our job is to just guide you along the way.
Here's what most people don't prepare you for. In the early years of the system, you are going to feel like nothing is happening. I didn't feel like that, but maybe you will. Some people do. And every other financial message you've ever received is going to tell you that feeling is a sign that you've made a mistake. And again, if you're one of those quitters because someone else convinced you, it's your Uncle Bob or another advisor or something, said, oh, why are you doing that? And you didn't have a good answer as to why you were doing it, that means you didn't put in the work to actually understand you're trying to create your own banking system.
There's so many people who work so hard to accumulate capital. And I fell into this trap at different times in my life where I've got my head down working so hard just to make more money, but then spend so little time and effort to keep what you make. It blows my mind that people will, you know, the biggest wealth destroyer out there is taxes, but people won't do any investigation. They won't read any book to tell them how to save some of their own wealth from taxes, from the tax man. Like, nobody's coming to save you. That's just a fact. Nobody's coming to save you. Nobody cares about your money except you.
Right.
So if you don't take it upon yourself to get educated and continue that education year after year, like all it takes, I mean, honestly, how much time does it really take? You know, you watch one fewer Netflix episodes a week. You invest 30 minutes a day, once a week, or 30 minutes a week for 52 weeks. I mean, that's over half a work week that you've devoted to your financial education. You know, you owe that to yourself, plain and simple. And the first place to start, read Becoming Your Own Banker.
Yep. Best first book you should read. You know, and the sad thing is most people just don't read any of it. If they're reading at all, they're not reading anything about finance or investing. I think these groups that we're a part of, it's a very, very small group of people relative to the entire population. You know, I watch these videos and some people they can't even name who the first president of the United States was. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I mean, anybody listening to this podcast is certainly not in that group. Like, if you're taking time out of your day to actually educate yourself financially through a podcast, then that probably puts you in the top 10% of the country.
Yeah. And I would say that counts. Like if that's your jam, sure. You know, because your commute or whatever, that counts, right? For sure. You know, you're not get everything here. I mean, there's tons of wisdom coming out of here, but you're not going to get everything.
I mean, just listen to each episode a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of them now.
You know, it's the psychology of the way we're fed information too, I think, about money, right? You know, I can remember my old boss, he would have, you know, Bloomberg on, you know, and it's on in the gym and it's the constant ticker, the market's this, the market's that. And it's just like, I found it incredibly boring. This was like, who cares? Oh, it's up a point. It's down a percentage point, whatever. Who cares? And, you know, I know it's important for you day traders, whatever, but it's just constant feedback, you know, just bombarded in your face and it infects everything too, right? It's just like, it creates stress. And I tell people this, like, I don't look at that at all. I have no idea generally what the stock market is doing. I don't really care because I do other, you know, alternative investing mainly, right? So that doesn't mean it's not important, whatever, but it's just something that, again, I'm living this peaceful IBC existence, controlling the banking function. I don't need to see movement on a ticker to feel happy or to see green text, right, instead of red. I don't need to see it.
I mean, let's be real. Did it really make your boss happy when he saw it go up a point? Probably not really, because it's not like money he can access right now. It's just money that's building for him and growing for him. But did he get a little upset if he saw it go down a point? Probably. Sure. Probably made him a little worse for wear throughout his day. So, yeah.
He was a great boss, though. He's not a listener, but, you know, Chris, he was good. He's a good dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really about, I mean, the one thing you can't make up for is time, right? So you said, hey, some people don't really see anything happening in the first year, the first 2 years or 3 years. It all depends on how much you're doing. You know, what are you capable of doing? If, the more you do, the bigger the growth, like anything, the bigger the effect, the bigger the compounding over time. The one thing to say is you're definitely going to see something because it's going to grow, like guaranteed. It's going to get bigger,
and
that number.
Yeah. And for sure. And something did happen, right? You probably just 20x your estate value on day one.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that sometimes gets lost. It's like, you're not putting money in a savings account. You're not putting in a CD or checking account or money market or whatever. You are buying a whole life insurance contract, you know, from a mutual company, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to pay a death benefit the next day or the day you sign the contract, they will pay a death benefit if you die.
Yeah.
Typically, people our age, it's roughly 20, depending on the policy done, but roughly, let's say 20x, right? The premium. It might be the death benefit, somewhere in that range, depending on your age, health, all that stuff. So that is doing something. You just capitalized a whole life policy and really cushioned your family's financial future and your legacy. So that is something, but it doesn't show up on a stock ticker value, right? It's not something that you can like, oh, look at that. But it's there. And that's what makes it all work, that you're using a properly designed whole life insurance contract to practice IBC. That's what makes this actually special.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's an instant estate. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's a good feeling, man, to know that you've taken care of your family, that I've got, like, you don't have to make much money to leave a pretty sizable estate. I mean, based on your age, you can create an estate that's 30 times your annual income,
right?
Like, that's a pretty sizable estate for anybody based on your annual income. Shoot. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I first started out on IBC and, you know, I did the 1035 exchange, kind of jump-started those policies with cash value, designed the policies for me, you know, nice blend of base and PUA premium. And I was just mildly interested about the tabular detail with all the numbers on the page, folks, that you're, you know, guaranteed, non-guaranteed. You know, I looked at it, but that's not what sold me on the concept at all, because that's just what it is. It was an illustration. The concept of being able to be independent and be ready for opportunity and leaving a legacy, those were all the things that appealed to me. The policy is going to do what the policy is going to do, and it's going to do it very reliably. It was nice, and, you know, I remember thinking, like, it was nice to not have to worry about it. I'm just going to keep paying this premium and I'm going to have roughly this amount of death benefit, roughly this amount of cash value. It's actually very close, right? And that's, it was those other intangibles, though, that really were interesting to me and appealed to me, being just independent and being financially free through privatized banking, practicing IBC. So the numbers on the pager are good. Like, oh, it breaks even in year 7 or year 10 or year 9. I don't care about any of that. Policy loan interest rates, don't care about that. I feel like people burn too many brain cells doing all this, you know, whatever they do. And some of these questions that you see out there in the YY world are just like, these people don't have a clue. Like, why aren't you asking your IBC agent? Oh, you don't really have one. You went up, you know, went through somebody else or something. But anyway, so that's, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just, you know, there's too many people majoring in the minors. I think you have to focus on what's really important, and that's banking, controlling the banking function and enshrining your legacy, like ensuring that it's going to be there when you graduate. And we all know we have no idea when that's going to be. So,
right. And Nelson says it's going to take the average person, the typical person, 20 to 25 years
right.
to break free of the banking system because right. you've built your own system that you can then use for the rest of your life. So, I mean, think 20, 25 years ago or 20 years ago, you were already out of college. It wasn't that long ago. Like 20 years ago is pretty fast. And, you know, I think I'm about 5 years away from maybe being completely free from the banking system, by having the choice to be completely free. I mean, I could right now if I had fewer kids and could live in a smaller house. But yeah, you know, which would put me right around 20 years. You know, I've been doing this for 16 years. And for the first 6 years, that capitalization phase for me, I just started policies and funded them. And I said, I'm just going to put that money away. That's my, you know, put my money away for the future. I was in the military. I thought, I don't really have any use for it right now. Like, I'm never going to go buy a car. You know, I'm not going to go buy a BMW on a captain's salary. Like, you know,
Cammy
there's
did.
Some who, yeah, well, you had two captain salaries.
No, this is before we were dating.
Okay. Okay. Well, she got smarter as time went on, more responsible with money. You can be, there's some very smart people that doesn't always translate to finances. I'm not saying she wasn't smart. Maybe she bought used. But
no, we don't buy used cars.
Of course you don't. Again, Paul's not anal at all. He doesn't want anybody to have ever touched
I don't want
car.
Someone else's garbage. The Hellcat was used, but it was very low mileage.
But again, anyway. My capitalization phase, it was just funding premium. I considered, hey, that's the money I'm going to save, and I'm just saving it over here. And I don't even know that I would look at those accounts for probably the first 6 years.
So you wouldn't look at the policies. Do you think when you know, it took you a while, you've mentioned on other podcasts, it took you roughly 6 months of some back and forth with your practitioner. Do you think it was more product for you? Like it's just a superior savings product? Or did you kind of understand the process of the infinite banking concept overlaid with using whole life insurance to practice it? Or do you think it was just more, hey, this is actually a really good product?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I was probably focused more on the product and less
that's
on the
what
process.
I think too. Yeah.
And that's why it took me 6 months to finally say, okay, yeah, this is for me. You know, not to mention that at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of resources. My resources were this one other person. And an email that we would send emails back and forth. That was it. Now there's so many resources. So I think people today, like our clients today, they intend to use that cash value pretty quickly, not like take a max loan for most of them to, you know, with eager investor syndrome or FOMO, like I got to put this to work. No, but they're saying, hey, I've already saved up and I save every month, let's just move all the savings I have right now and what I'm going to do every month going forward and throw it into a policy. And the next time I need to buy a car or replace the air conditioner or renovate my house, I'm just going to pull the cash from there. Instead of using it only one time for the rest of my life, I'll use it over and over and over again for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone wants mailbox money and all this crap, wants to be a real estate mogul. What people should be doing is you're good at something. You know, all the clients we work with are good at their job, and then we just teach them that the other job or the other business that they should be in is the banking business. So they really don't have to change anything. And again, like I was thinking about this today. I was actually in the Tesla, we can chat with Grok. And I was just chatting with her. We have the female version of Grok or whatever. You can change it to a male, but it's a female. It's actually hilarious. But telling her about IBC, you know, IBC, and of course she can look up what it is. But I was thinking that, you know, I basically got her to say, like, yeah, that's really a good idea. If you recapture the 34 and a half cents that you of every disposable dollar that you would be paying to interest to somebody else's bank, you've given yourself essentially a 34.5% tax-free return. Right? You know, Essentially. If you could recover all of it, right? I don't know if you really can, but over time you can, for sure. But even if you can recover 10% of it, it's worthwhile. Just continue to do what you're good at.
And that's just it. You don't have to, I think it's too often we always think all or nothing. Well, I've either got to go big into this and put everything I got behind it, or I'm just not going to do it. No, it's not that at all. Like, at least capture some of the banking function in your own life, right? And create some sort of estate for your family. Ideally, a big enough estate that's going to take care of them for all those years you intended to continue working to take care of them and accomplish all the goals you had in mind. But just do something. It doesn't have to be everything.
No, certainly not. You know, and, you know, high level IBC, you know, where every premium matches income, right? Because dividends, right? Dividends get big over time, and those are premium, right? Because if you're using them to buy PUAs.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be interesting, kind of like David Stearns told that story of, you know, the tale of two fathers a couple of think tanks ago, and how the end of his own father's life and the end of Nelson's life, and how his dad was more of a traditional, you know, guy with the investments and the savings and stuff. And yeah, Nelson, obviously, with multiple, you know, 47 policies at the peak or something across the family, and whatever ones he owned at the end there. And just the difference of wealth transfer was a stark difference. Like, it wasn't even close, because all that other money that you've accumulated in these other traditional accounts and investments, whatever, those get bled down. Those got bled down and spent on healthcare and insurance and mortgages and whatever, which is fine, but Nelson had both. So it's both, like Dave was saying, it's both and. You can have a crap load of dividend paying whole life insurance, pay meaningful premium, and you can have your investment portfolio. It's not an either or strategy. We've never said that it is. Because it's not. It's both.
No. But it's really both and.
And. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is. Infinite. It really is. It's infinite.
Yeah. So, you know, as we wrap this segment up, the capitalization phase, it's more of a test than anything. It's, are you actually thinking like a banker? Can you think long range? Are you willing to rethink your thinking and really understand the process of banking and do what it takes to put yourself into a position to be your own banker and be able to have access to capital and be able to make decisions from a position of strength versus a position of weakness where you have to go ask for money and apply for money and qualify for it, right? So again, this isn't about the product, although the product's very important. And we know the product inside and out, but it's really about the process. And part of the process is building that foundation, getting through those early years to where you actually start seeing that compounding, seeing that growth. And you start to realize, wow, paying these premiums actually only gets funner. That's not a word, but only gets funner every single year.
More fun.
Because it's doing more for me every single year.
Yeah. And I've often said this to people. I was like, this is going to become your favorite thing to do every time that annual premium comes up, or however you pay, which say you're paying annually. Every time that annual premium comes up, and once you get over that hump where every dollar in premium is making more of a dollar in cash, you're going to be like, oh my God, they were right. This is just a wonderful place to put money. And all those other attributes that the credit protection, the death benefit, the living benefits of cash value policy loans and waiver of premium and accelerated death benefit, all these things that you're doing to transfer risk from yourself to the life insurance company, you're going to start to kind of appreciate those more as well over time, not just the, you know, policy loans.
Yeah, very true. So we'll go ahead and cut the episode here and go ahead and absorb this. Come back next week for the second half of this, where we continue talking about the capitalization phase. And, you know, and maybe some common arguments of why people talk themselves out of it and really what getting through that phase actually looks like. So hope you enjoyed. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Well, hey, to hear more and see more, visit thewealthwarehousepodcast.com. You can take our free course. You can find some links there. And then you can schedule time with me or Paul.
And don't forget to hit that notification bell so you can be alerted to part two of this outstanding episode.
And if you like what you heard today, share it with somebody in your network. We appreciate it.